Hour three of Sports Sunday. We're going till 1:05 today. We'll run you right into Nats coverage. Nats Giants final game of the set. 1:35, weather permitting, and right now it's looking okay. It is kids sleeveless hoodie day at the park. Please be civil when it comes to these kind of giveaways. I saw where there was fights breaking out. I forget what stadium had this, what team had this, but it was like a very popular puffer jacket night at the ballpark. Whole jacket. Fans going crazy about that. Next up for the Nats, the Braves for four at home. Then the schedule softens a bit at the White Sox and then at the Mets. The Mets are in a free fall right now. And I don't wish misery on Met fans. I know a couple. Galdi is one from way back in the day. I don't wish misery on them, but it's funny to see. And, you know, of course, Frank the Tank from Barstool, the number one, you know, loses his, you know what, when the Mets are bad. The Mets and the Jets, the two of them, it's something about being the B teams in New York that no matter how much money they spend or how maybe on paper good of an idea something might be, like Aaron Rodgers, what can go wrong? It ends up going wrong for them. And so the Mets in this middle of an epic losing streak, I saw somebody did a very photorealistic AI photo of Mr. Met literally sitting on the edge of a bridge with a New York City police officer and a Met fan in a jacket trying to coax Mr. Met off the bridge. Now, suicide is a serious subject, and not to make light of it, but in terms of just the accuracy, the photorealism of the photo, I'm like, damn, that kind of hits hard. Like, the way they made Mr. Met so utterly sad was remarkable. The Nats are having an interesting season so far, given that the tag team of Wood and Abrams have been raking. The pitching is terrible, but still, it's intriguing what's going on, at least with the bats. And so early on, as we approach the one-month mark of the season, I think there's some things to be genuinely optimistic about. Okay, earlier on the show, we talked about the new Commanders uniform slash alt logo, the Ovi puzzle, and my stance on that is simple. Pay the freight, pay the man. Let's not overthink this. He wants to come back for another year. If it costs you a free agent that you otherwise might have gotten with the extra $5 million, it's not going to be worth it. Spend the money. Let's have one last proper year of thank you, Ovi, and goodbye, Ovi. And with the young guys on the team, I think there's a really good shot they not only make the playoffs, but they make some noise once the postseason comes. Talk to Marty Conway, our sports biz guy, about the LIV Tour and Saudi money drying up for certain sports projects around the world. Lamented the fact that bars can't figure out how to do streaming, and also found out that poor Wesley's Uber Eats order got canceled the last minute. Do we have an update on that? Do you have a reroute of your Taco Bell, or what's the situation?
Okay, the current situation is preparing your order, and the guy delivering it is on a bicycle. It is the Taco Bell in Chinatown, so that's I'll probably get it tomorrow.
He's going to bike from Chinatown down to Half.
Yeah, I mean, that's unreal.
That's aggressive. I mean, it's doable. It's aggressive, though. That's called big city living right there. Okay, Ben Standing joins us. Now I believe we've got Ben on the line of the last. Not yet. Okay, get to him in a second. Let me give you some basketball scores. The favorites went 4-0 yesterday, in case you're wondering, in the NBA playoffs. The Cavaliers beat the Raptors 126-113. Spida Mitchell with a big game yet again, 30-plus points. I believe he set the record for most consecutive 30-plus or better first game of the playoffs streaks in NBA history. One of these records that are only kind of cooked up out of the spreadsheets and the record books of being able to search. Well, how many guys have done this? Cleveland could be a surprise team. The Nuggets over the T-Wolves, 116-105. as once again, Mr. Triple Double, Nikola Jokic, did what he does. The Knicks beat the Hawks 113-102, and the Lakers with LeBron turning back the clock yet again, nearly a triple double for him. No Luka, no Reeves, still beat the Rockets, who are without Kevin Durant, 107-98. The spreads in today's games are higher on average than yesterday, as the Celtics are minus 12.5 against 12.5 against the Sixers. Thunder are minus 13.5 against the Suns. The Pistons minus just 7.5 against the Magic, and the Spurs minus 10.5 against the Blazers. We'll see what the favorites do today in the NBA. Okay, Ben Standing joins us now. You hear him on this station a lot, and of course, you listen to his podcast, The Last Man Standing Podcast, as well as subscribe to his Substack. Draft is Thursday. You're ready, Ben. I'm ready. Let's get this thing going. How you doing?
Zabe, I'm doing great. Yeah, I've had enough of the mock drafts, and I like doing the mock drafts, and I'll do 16 more this week, but man, it is we got to get going already.
How did this Giants trade that has now delivered a second top 10 pick to New York perhaps disrupted some people's mock draft expectations? Because now the Giants have more assets to play with.
Yeah, I think potentially this is not a great news for Washington when it comes to the draft. And that is, if we talk about the players that we've discussed all throughout this cycle, Jeremiah Love, Sonny Styles, these are players that were potentially targeted for the Giants, except that it felt like the Giants were maybe ultimately going to lean towards an offensive lineman, both because that's a need and also sort of a, you know, tone setter kind of choice for John Harbaugh to come in and, you know, toughness and all that stuff. The thing is, though, now that they have the 10th pick, they can still get that offensive lineman at 10 and be a pretty comparable player, freeing them up to therefore take Love or Styles if one of them is there. And I kind of feel like Love may go to the Titans at 4. It feels like that's where the league is landing on right now. But Styles at 5 could very well be now in play for the Giants. The other move is the Jordan Tyson, the receiver from Arizona State. I don't want to say his stock is up because is this the public is catching up to the league, but right. He's gotten a lot more attention in recent days. He now might be in play for the Giants at 5. So on the one hand, that would potentially help in that it's not somebody we've been discussing who therefore it wouldn't change how it might look for Love or Styles. But, you know, if Washington is going to trade down, which I think ultimately they would like to do, Tyson going that early probably wouldn't help because the theory was that the line starts with the Saints at 8, so if you wanted to jump the Saints, you might be calling Washington. So those are just a couple ways I think the board could change based on this trade.
I think it's very interesting because there's a lot of options like you kind of laid out for the Giants. Let's say a team gets super horny for the 5th pick. The Giants are in a much better position to release that for a bigger haul of future picks or down the line this year's draft because they're still sitting at 10. They'll get somebody good at 10, so they're not empty-handed. It's when a team only has one first-round pick and they take next year's picks to get out of that leaves fan bases frustrated. So I could easily see that happening as well.
Yeah, sure. I mean, this is I think the underrated part of the discussion of the Dexter Lawrence Bengals trade, you know, that happened last night was that obviously everybody's focusing on, wow, Dexter Lawrence is a pretty good player. The Bengals gave up the 10th pick, though. That's a high asset to give up for a player, you know, based on a third contract, et cetera. I think it's a sign to me, and this is incredibly out of character for the Bengals. This is not something that they ever do, trading away first-round picks. I think it's another indication that people do not love this draft. Teams are willing to trade out of the first round to get more established players, and I think that's largely because of the fact that this draft does not offer a ton of help relative to expectations. I mean, there'll be some guys picked in the top 10 this week who in other years would be, you know, later teens or maybe even to the 20s. So I think that's the thing. So if you go down too far, I think like 11 to me has kind of felt like the outer limit, then you're going down a legit tier, and that's where it gets tricky. You know, are you willing to trade out of it? Like you said, the Giants with the 10th pick would therefore still have one in that range, assuming that they, you know, like certain kind of players. So that could still work for them, but I think that's a rub for, it seems like, Washington or others who want to trade down. It's like, how far are you willing to go?
All right. Who do you think the Commanders really like at 7? From the people you've talked to and just the tea leaves you've been reading, who do they really like?
I would think they would be pretty happy if either Styles or Love is on the board. Styles is just the athletic freak, versatile linebacker that would be a really good fit for this defense where you're going to have guys, you know, pressuring the quarterback from here, there, and everywhere. And he's a perfect modern linebacker, former safety, who can cover, but he also has great size and speed. So I think that would be one. And I think for Love, you know, we can all quibble about the idea of taking a running back this high, but Washington absolutely needs more playmakers on offense. And this is the guy who, again, you can debate where, you know, what's fair value for taking a running back this high or not, because he'll be one of the highest paid players at his position day one. But I think he would be a home run call for them as well. I don't think they're trading out if he's sitting there. I don't know if either one of them is going to be there, though, and then that's where it gets tricky after that, because I can make arguments pro and con for kind of everybody else.
Is Reuben Bain still on the board at 7, given the little bit of information that was reported in a couple weeks ago?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like that information was already baked into the cake for teams, so because they've known about it for some time. So I don't know that off-the-field stuff will impact him. You know, we've obviously talked a lot about the shorter arms and all that. I just think for me, and maybe I'm wrong, but I just don't see how he fits with Washington, what they do defensively, period. He's basically a 4-3 end, and they're going to play more of a 3-4 look. He's not a guy I wouldn't think you'd want potentially having to drop back or play standing up too much,
right,
versus the way, say, like they're going to have a Owe do it. But, yeah, I mean, he's obviously very productive, very powerful. Long term, they do need more help on the edge. So I guess it just depends on what they think he's like, how he fills out physically over time. He's not the biggest guy, but if he gets a little bit bigger, maybe he can play a 3-4 end, or they're not as rigid on this 3-4 concept as we may think. So I don't think he would be in play for them. But, you know, again, from a pure, you know, production standpoint in college, it'll be hard to argue against him.
A name that I have now heard a couple different places, possibly at 7, although I'm struggling to believe it, is USC wide receiver Mekhi Lemon. Is that possible that high? And if it were, what are the benefits of this particular guy?
Yeah, he's a yard after the catch machine. He has the highest yards per target of anybody in college who's in this draft this year. He primarily lines up in the slot. He's not the biggest guy, but he plays bigger, plays tougher. Mm-hmm. He's got great hands. All that said, look, Washington needs another, maybe they don't need a slot as much as they need an outside guy, but they need more production from receivers, without question. I just don't think that's a realistic place for him at 7. Now, again, if this is where a trade down situation, Miami at 11 or the Rams at 13 come calling, then maybe in that range you could consider him. But I think at 7, it feels a little high. If they're going to go receiver at 7, I would guess they would go for Carnell Tate, who's, you know, a little more classic built receiver. He's got a lot of Terry McLaurin kind of skills, like really just good across the board. But, I think he lacks some athletic explosion, and that's why I just don't know that he's an ideal fit for what Adam Peters looks for typically. But, yeah, I would think 7's a bit high for Lemon.
Okay. I've seen reports that, and who knows if these are accurate or not, but it would seem to make sense that there's a good chance that Brandon Ayuk lands here after his post-June 1 cap casualty that's expected. Also, for those who have not been paying attention, Debo is still out there as a free agent, which tends to make you think that he's not in the plans for Washington, or are they waiting for the price to get lower? What do you make of these two X-Niner wide receivers?
Yeah, obviously Debo, he was hampered by the injuries around him more than like his own injuries. I thought he was pretty productive at the beginning of the year and showed a lot at the end of the year, but he's a guy you have to work around. He's not like a traditional receiver, and I think they've kind of moved off of that, especially with his different type of look offensively. But, you know, okay, we'll see. He exists. The Ayuk part, I mean, look, nobody knows what we're dealing with here in both physically, mentally. Like, we don't know where he's at on 100 different levels here. Now, that said, if they draft Carnell Tate at 7, or, you know, another outside receiver, if they trade down in the first round, that does not bode well for them signing Ayuk, which I'm not complaining about. But I'm just saying, like, that to me would be more curious. Now, it's not to say that you would hand the job over to Ayuk, but if you're going to bring him in, you don't want to all of a sudden be clogging up his playing time by having a first-round pick plus Terry McLaurin on the outside. So if they don't take a first-round pick, which is kind of where I'm leaning, then signing Ayuk, I think, is a little bit more palatable, just in terms of a depth chart perspective. The rest of it is still up in the air. So, so that's kind of where I'm at. I don't know. I mean, it's such a bizarre rumor mill scenario with him. There's literally no other team being discussed except for Washington.
Yeah.
And yet, I get the upside, but the downside is just smacking me in the face too much. It's just like, I don't get this.
There will be people saying, for the right price, why wouldn't you? My answer to that is, well, in any wide receiver room, there's a lot of hungry mouths, and the only way that those kind of receiver rooms coexist nicely is when they're all getting fed. And I'd be worried about the feeding of all those mouths, especially if they were to take a wide receiver at 7. I think that's too much to ask, but we shall see. Last question, Ben. Ben Standing Podcast and also Substack. Make sure you subscribe and download and listen. Adam Peters going into his third draft as the GM of this team. It's a pretty important one, isn't it, for him?
Yeah, well, I mean, look, I think there was obviously a decent amount of shakeup this offseason in terms of, two new coordinators, a lot of new players coming in, but if they have another year, I mean, if they have anything close to last year, who knows what happens in terms of changes. But, even just a down year, a sub-500 year, which, they could be competitive and just not win the games, that could also lead to changes. Now, I don't think that Adam Peters is probably in any danger almost regardless. But, yeah, I mean, look, this would be, I still give them a pass in some ways with this roster because they inherited, kind of a mess. None of the first-round picks ahead of them, from the Rivera era worked out. Yeah. So we can keep, sort of noting that, but that clock is ticking. We can't keep doing that forever. And, if you have a third year of drafts and free agent signings, that's your team now. So yeah, this is a big year in that regard. And, look, injuries were an absolute disaster last year, but it exposed the lack of depth. I think they've done a better job so far this offseason addressing that. There's still, for me, there's certainly questions still on defense as well as at that receiver room.
All right, Benny, we appreciate your time this morning. Thank you so much for dropping in. Have a great Sunday, my friend, and we're looking forward to Thursday night getting this thing going.
Zabe, always appreciate it, man. Thanks.
There you go, Ben Standing of the Ben Standing Podcast and Substack. I know this, if the commander leaders we're back Sports Sunday here on The Fan with you on the board. Best one Uber Eats order already canceled down on his second one, supposedly coming from Bicycle from Chinatown. Currently is still in Chinatown and scheduled to be in at the doorstep in 10 minutes.
Yes. I mean, there's no way.
Chance.
The guy hasn't left the restaurant.
If only we had robots that could do this kind of stuff. I'm watching right here. Apparently in China, they have these robot marathon competitions. And for the first time ever, a humanoid-looking robot won the half marathon in Beijing. 50 minutes and 26 seconds. Finishing faster than Ugandan runner Jacob Kiplimo's world record in the half marathon.
Great. Why don't he run over here, that robot, and deliver me my Taco Bell?
One of these days we will. Now, you got to see these videos because there's a whole bunch of different robots that have been programmed to be able to run fast enough to finish a half marathon in 50 minutes without tripping or crashing. I have seen a number of robot crashes, though, and they're hilarious. I mean, the robots, when they crash, they fall apart and their limbs start just flailing wildly and parts are breaking off. But yeah, these are the worst humanoid robots we're ever going to have. And last year, the best robot in the half marathon clocked in at 2 hours and 40 minutes. This year, 50 minutes. So you do the math on how good they're getting. It's crazy. One of these days, we'll teach them how to deliver some Taco Bell.
I mean, at this point, I'm just going to...
That's not soggy and cold, Wesley.
That's what's going to happen. For. It's raining. It's going to seep into my food. I mean, at this point, I'm just going to drive. There's a Taco Bell on the way home with a drive-thru. I'm just going to do that.
Yeah, but you got to wait until, what, 1:15 to get there?
At this rate, today? This guy's not going to get here until Thursday.
When are you off? I know that I got a half an hour left. When are you done today?
Oh, I'm the same time as you.
Okay, all right. Well, hang in there is all I can say. Hang in there.
Help.
All right, let me pivot here. Actually, I'm wondering if I've got time for this here. What's my latest break acceptable in this hour? 35?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay, 35. A last thought on the Diana Rossini-Mike Vrabel situation in sports and sports media. One of my favorite memes is from The Simpsons. Go to knowyourmeme.com or Maymay, as one Bryce Harper once famously and hilariously said incorrectly. Knowyourmeme.com. Don't make me tap the sign. This came from a Simpsons episode in which Lisa was lost on a bus and was talking the driver's ear off about, where's my next stop? Where do I go? Blah, 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 blah. And the driver was just not interested in talking to her. So there was a sign above the driver on the bus that said, do not talk to the driver. And at one point, the driver said dismissively, don't make me tap the sign. I feel like we should remind ourselves of that when it comes to the whole Rossini situation. Don't make me tap the sign. You can't, the coaches. You just can't. I don't know why this is complicated for some people, but I will tap the sign and say, if you're reporting on the league, you can't, coaches. Just, there's no way around it. And when you see that photo with that photo, and then you understand it's a $2,000 a night, adults only, ultra-exclusive resort that's in Sedona, 2 hours north of the NFL league meeting. I mean, we're all adults, people. We live in the real world. We know when you see these photos and there's nobody else in them but the two of them. And then when asked about, so do you have any pictures of this girls' hike you're on? When The Athletic asked Rossini, can you prove via a receipt for your room on your credit card that you got your own room and you were not there at someone else's? She quickly pivoted to the harumph. I will not be subject to a public investigation or interrogation. What does she call it? Tribunal of some sorts. I'll tap the sign. You can't be doing that. Now, the defenses of Rossini that have come from some parts of the semi-active currently sports ecosystem have been rather weak and tangential at best. The arguments or the pushback from the likes of Jemele Hill are, well, if this were a man, dot, dot, dot. That's not really a defense of me tapping the sign. It's more of a hypothetical, to which many people easily pushed back and said, well, when those roles are reversed, when a male reporter is indeed caught quite likely canoodling with a female coach, let us know. And trust me, we'll be there with the outrage. Michelle Beadle tangentially defended it by saying, you know what? I know a lot about a lot of you people, so don't start getting on your high horse. That's a tangential defense That's not really saying she was fine to do this. It was more of a, you better watch it because you're standing in a glass house before you throw stones. It shouldn't have to be repeated. It shouldn't be in any sort of manual or guidebook. Don't the coaches. But here we are. And just saying that she's talented and well-liked and that she'll land on her feet and she'll get some other gig, which I do believe she will, by the way, is also not an actual defense of the thing. I mean, she was voting on the Coach of the Year award, which is not the most important thing in the world, but it's still significant. And so if those photos and that circumstance that she's got no exonerating evidence for or didn't present it to her employer exists and she's involved in this exercise, I mean, you can't have it. But I also don't look at the so-called insider business with any great high-level respect of being actual Big J journalism. The only guy that's really doing Big J journalism now in sports is Pablo Torre in his podcast. And I love it. But it's expensive. It takes time. And the unfortunate net of it is many people just don't care. Like the Kawhi Leonard payoff, the under the table, break all the rules of the salary cap in the NBA story that he really single-handedly blew the lid off of. What's happened since? Nothing. They're not going to touch Steve Ballmer, the richest owner in the league. I'm sorry, governor in the league. And it cost a lot of money, took a lot of time for Pablo and his team to go get these documents from whatever it was. It's like, you know, what good does it do in the end? Clicks and outrage are a lot easier. Relationships and being part of the cool kids at the best lunch table, that's really where the money is. It's more fun, too. So I never look at these insiders as any big journalists that are revealing the truth that doesn't want to get out by those in power. They're trading access for information. And it's been that way for a while. It'll be that way going forward. The only thing that has to be said is you can't the coaches. That's an ironclad rule. Okay, coming up, we're winding down here, heading towards the top of the hour. Nats and Giants getaway. Not getaway day, but end of the road, end of the series day of this set under cloudy, but so far looking pretty promising for some baseball skies. It's Sports Sunday right here on the Fan. I do love a good, unique concession item, but Buffalo Sabre fans are going nuts right now for this promotional item for in advance of their first home playoff game in 15 years. They're selling beer sabers. That's right. They are tubes that are shaped like sabers with handles on them. Don't ask me how they stand up. And don't ask me how you're supposed to hold them without the beer sloshing out of the end of it. But I'm looking at a proud Sabre fan with his two beer sabers. I'm thinking to myself, man, people will buy just about anything. That's part of the fun of being a sports fan. Welcome back. Sports Sunday, rounding the corner, heading towards home on this nice three-hour run we've had. I've got some odds and ends to get to here in just a second. Good news is on the Uber Eats front, our man says his food is here. He's ducked out to go get it down curbside. This is no small feat given the labyrinth-like sort of way you have to escape the 106.7 The Fan studios. We're all the way in the corner of the building, the far corner. So you have to go a good, 200-plus feet through the hallways, through the bullpen area, round the corner, out the door of our floor, down from the second floor, down to the first, out the security gates by the desk, up a set of stairs, and then out to the curb. And then you got to get all the way back that way. So even being efficient You don't have a lot of time. But I don't want my man to be hungry, young Wesley Clark, so I'm glad he's getting his food right now. Some odds and ends here, just sports-wise. Don't know what's going to happen next, but I love you guys. That's Steve Kerr in a mic'd-up little clip with both Steph Curry and Draymond Green after they were eliminated on Friday night by the Suns. First of all, it would have been amazing if the Warriors could have beaten the Suns because it would have knocked the Suns out of the playoffs and into the lottery, and it would have benefited the Wizards by getting that lottery-protected pick. It didn't happen, and so you just knew. Like, it's not going to break our way. But after the game, when Kerr was asked what he said about his two main pieces of this incredible run of success for the Golden State Warriors, what would happen next, he said he didn't want to reveal anything, but the Amazon Prime mic'd up audio had this.
I don't know what's going to happen next, but I love you guys to death, and thank you.
I appreciate you.
Yeah. Also, Draymond Green got kicked out of the game in the last minute and 15 seconds, I want to say it was, for jawing with Devin Booker of the Suns. And when he left, of course, this was a road game at Phoenix, Draymond Green was playing it up to the crowd, making faces, doing the hands like, come on, you can get louder, you can get louder. I mean, this is just who Draymond Green is. He is a adjutant. He is a kind of versatile player. I think he's grossly overhyped by some people who are basketball nerds. And, you know, he's got a history of some real cheap shots. But he's been a huge part of this Warriors run. And I'm sure Warrior fans love him. Like any guy who is an adjutant, like Piston fans when they had Bill Laimbeer, even though you might know a guy isn't old, if he's yours, you'll find a way to like him. I think a lot of people feel that way about Tom Wilson to the Caps, but he's our guy. Wilson, though, is skilled, though, in addition to being a tough guy, and has, you know, crossed the line a few times, and the league has let him know about that. For Golden State, it's going to be a tough decision because they've got Steph Curry, who's approaching 40, is 38 years old, I believe, and still a very good player, but he's injured more and more. Is there enough to put around him? Is there enough assets they can marshal to get a team around him that could actually contend? You know, the West is so loaded. There's three super teams in the West, in the Thunder, the Spurs, and the Nuggets. So what is your realistic chances at this point, and how much more do you want to keep putting into essentially a dying dynasty? Charlotte's out after their win in the first of their two play-in games, and LaMelo Ball was once again in the news because, you know, he got fined for the intentional trip of Bam Adebayo. That didn't make Spoelstra happy. Then you had guys like Nick Wright calling him a clown. Then you had LaMelo's Ball, LaVar, remember him? Clapping back, calling Nick Wright a clown. Nick Wright kind of backed down. He shouldn't have. Because here was LaMelo Ball talking about what he should have done in their loss that knocked him out of the play-in tournament.
That huge third quarter, what kind of happened or was said internally maybe at halftime that you wanted to take matters into your own hands and really create a lot for your team then?
I just feel like it was just too late. I should have been doing that from the jump for real. But like I said, we was doing a lot of plays and stuff, just getting pushed around and everything. I feel like I should have just took the ball from the beginning for real.
Do a lot of plays and stuff, you know, team basketball. I should have just taken it myself. People said he threw his coach under the bus. Charles Lee is your head coach of the Charlotte Hornets. So, yeah. Not the best look right there, but you can kind of get away with that when you've got, checks notes, Charles Lee as your coach. Did you know that Michael Jordan and Charles Barkley have reconciled? There was a long sort of low-key feud between the two that a lot of people didn't really like, given that both guys being as popular as they are. You're like, oh man, why do they gotta be at odds with each other? Barkley said recently in an interview that the two of them have kind of buried the hatchet on their feud, and that they've played golf together and they plan to do more so of it in the future. That's a good thing, if you ask me. Also on the Barkley front, if you missed Inside the NBA last night, as the conclusion of the lone game that was on ABC on network TV yesterday, don't beat yourself up because it was quick. 23 minutes total. 23 minutes of Inside the NBA. The show only works if they've got room to roam and be silly and be wacky. All right, coming up, final segment this hour. We head towards Nats coverage just after the top of the hour. You're listening to Sports Sunday on The Fan. I've never done parachuting or hot air ballooning. Not sure I'm going to at this age. Just want to make it to a ripe old age. Did you see the parachuter at Virginia Tech's spring game yesterday in high winds crashing into the sea in Virginia Tech on the scoreboard?
I sure did.
Yikes.
I got all my friends sending it to me.
I was going to say... You're a Hokie, aren't you?
Yeah, I was supposed to be at the game, but it was covering the Defenders yesterday.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, all my friends were sending it to me. It was, I mean, then you see everyone on Twitter, then, you know, major news networks were talking about it. Unreal. I mean, right. The guy is so lucky that his parachute didn't hatch.
Was the parachuter, paratrooper part of our armed forces? Was he a civilian? Is this a rent-a-parachuter type situation.
Seemed like it, but no, I don't think he was military. I just think it was one of those guys who like do skills.
Was it just high winds or operator error?
High winds.
You see he's coming down, there's high winds, and he's not making any progress. He's trying to get inside the bowl of the stadium, inside Lane Stadium, and he was trying to clear the scoreboard, and he wasn't making any progress. And I think at the last minute he decided, you know what? I'm not getting inside the bowl. I need to turn around. And as soon as he tried to turn around, that's when he pretty much dropped out of the sky.
Yes,
and was dangling there from the scoreboard before EMS teams rescued him.
Yeah, so there's three, people, you know, sailing in. First guy made it, but it was a little shaky. He like slammed into the ground. The second guy coming in actually bailed and landed on a field adjacent to the stadium, and then the third ran into the scoreboard because I think he tried to get into that same practice field adjacent to the stadium like his buddy who made it, but he did not.
Okay.
It took about 30 minutes for Blacksburg Fire Department to arrive.
Yeah. Then there's this. I'm going to share with you a video. I'll make sure to retweet it as well. A man walked out his backyard in Temecula, California, to find 13 people in a hot air balloon basket staring back at him and smiling. The resident said he was watching TV Saturday morning when he got a knock on his front door from his neighbor saying, "Hey, you might want to check your backyard." According to one of the hot air balloon riders, the pilot had to make an emergency landing because there wasn't enough wind and they only had a little fuel left. The pilot tried landing in the street but ended up in the backyard. No one was injured and there was no property damage. But, oh my God, the video of this hot air balloon intact with a basket full of people in it right in your tiny little backyard is something else. And what I don't get is that if I'm a passenger in that hot air balloon and I've survived a potential fatal crash and landed in somebody's nice mown backyard in Temecula, I'm getting out of the basket right away.
Dude, they're posing for a picture.
Yes, get out. Get out before something even worse happens. I've seen videos of balloon crashes where the balloon lights on fire and people fall to their death. I didn't want to see them. The algorithm forced them upon me. I wish I'd never seen them. I'm looking at this. Wesley, I'm like, what are you dummies doing? Bail. And if the pilot says, well, no, I can't have you get out because we need to keep the basket on the ground. If you get out, it's going to rise up. We need to calmly, we need to start like letting air. I'd be like, I don't care. I do not care about your balloon right now, sir. I'm on the ground. I am not going to die today. We're lucky we didn't, landing in some dude's backyard. All right, quick break, final segment, little 5-minute segment, and then we hand you off to the Nationals. It is Sports Sunday on the Fan.